Blog Talk Radio.
Problem. Hopefully we'll start our usual time Wednesday. Anyway, on this day after Veterans Day, although we're celebrating it on the 12th, here are the interesting births on this number 12th. 1790, Letitia Tyler was born. She was the wife of John Tyler. President Harry Truman was related to John Tyler. And, of course, Tyler was supported the Confederacy. He succeeded William Henry Harrison, who gave the longest inaugural speech in history. He did it bareheaded, caught a cold, pneumonia, and died. And Tyler succeeded him. Interestingly, during Tyler's administration, he was on board a U.S. Navy ship where they were testing a new cannon. The cannon exploded, and I believe it killed the Secretary of the Navy. In 1815, Elizabeth Cody Stanton was born. She was a fervent suffragette who worked to get women to vote. Now, among our public policy questions, this is going to be a new edition public policy question. Isn't it time to abolish the Electoral College? One of the reasons the Electoral College was set up at the beginning of the nation was to to deny the vote to poor whites, indentured servants, free blacks, black slaves, women, and Native Americans. The Electoral College is not relevant today. It's a waste of time, money. In fact, I think in at least one case, an elector in the Electoral College refused to follow the vote in his own state. And I forgot when this happened. We'll look it up. But it's a waste of money, a waste of time, and shouldn't the presidential candidate who gets the most popular votes be the elected president, not this have this kind of House of Lords situation that we have. Among the other birthdays today, the head of the Baha'i faith, a guy named Miraz Hassan Ali, born in 1877. It's a very strange, bizarre, some people think it's a cult. One of the great Russian composers wrote a beautiful music. He was a chemist, but he didn't want to be a chemist, so he spent his spare time writing music, such as Prince Igor, great opera, and two symphonies. It was about the same time, he lived the same time as Mussorgsky, Kui, Rimsky-Korsakov, Gretchmaninoff, a lot of the great Russian composers. If you think of the thinker, Rodin, August Rodin was born today. And if you go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, you will see an Afghan who decided to pose in front of the copy of the thinker statue here in San Francisco. Another revolutionary was born today. 1866, Sun Yat-sen, the founder of modern China, or the Republic of China, was born. We had the guy who started Reader's Digest, DeWitt Wallace, his birthday. He was one of the Minnesota twins appointed by Richard Nixon to the presidency. 1908, Harry Blackmun, who voted for abortion. He was also the intellectual judicial partner of Warren Berger. They were known as the Minnesota twins. In 1929, Grace Kelly of the Kelly family in Philadelphia, very wealthy family, actress. She was born and she didn't act in too many movies. I think it was A Country Girl and a few others. And she met Prince Rainier in Monaco and they fell in love. And she married him, Catholic faith, became a princess. She died mysteriously. It is said that she lost control of a car while driving in Monaco, but some people, cognoscenti, think that it was the daughter who was driving and accidentally killed her mother. It's a speculation. This is relevant to a case that I not only met this guy, but in 1934, Charles Manson was born in, I believe, in Ohio. And I met him many years ago in the Haight-Ashbury while I was walking, and he backed me off the street. I was looking into his eyes, and it was like a black pit. Later, a couple of weeks later, I was reading the San Francisco Chronicle, and I recognized his face, and I thought, oh, my God, I met this guy in the street. Manson has come up recently in the cell phone controversy in California state prisons. A former inmate, now a citizen, informed me, in fact, we did an interview, that Manson got two cell phones. Now, how did he even get one is a question. Not only that, all these women have sent him proposals for marriage. It's really bizarre. Great German singer Lucia Popp, it's her birthday today. Among the deaths today, in 1035, Canute, the king of the Danes. I believe he was the guy that decided he wanted to play Moses and ordered the sea to part. It didn't happen. The guy who started the first yeshiva in Poland, Rabbi Shalom ben Joseph, 1558. And there was a lot of Polish Jews, or Poles, who were Jewish heritage. I prefer to use that term. And in fact, one of the most interesting ones that I knew here in San Francisco was Nate Ratner, who's ancestors emigrated, half of them emigrated to San Francisco, the other half emigrated to Palestine, which later became Israel, and one of them became a general in the tank corps, and he was a hero of the Six-Day War. Interesting, and then, of course, a lot of Poles of Jewish heritage, like Arthur Rubinstein, the great pianist. You had a lot of Jewish heritage ancestry. Among the events today, now this gets back to the Electoral College, and one of the reasons why the Electoral College was set up was to bar free blacks and black slaves, we call Negro slaves. In 1775, the British offered, I think it was Lord Dunsmore, who offered free blacks freedom, or blacks freedom, if they enlisted in the British Army to fight in the Revolutionary War on the British side, or the Loyalist side. George Washington forbade his officers from recruiting blacks to join the Continental Army. And, of course, George Washington had slaves. The guy who invented the Leotard in 1859, Jacques Leotard, died. The last emperor the last emperor of Austro-Hungary Empire after the end of World War I, Franz Joseph, the longest living male monarch, I think it was close to 75 years, he died during the First World War, and he was succeeded by his nephew, Carl, and Carl abdicated, although there's still Habsburgs around today who think that the monarchy should be restored in Austria. Baseball started oversight after the Black Sox scandal, which involved the Chicago White Sox, and they called them the Black Sox because they took bribes and threw the World Series. A guy named from the Tennessee, Judge Kenshaw, known Landis, Mountain Landis, became the first commissioner of American baseball. And he was supposed to oversee and make sure that the game, and there was no bribery, and they were clean. It hasn't happened today with the Barry Bonds scandal and alleged drugs. Now, this gets back to Warren G. Harding. He was known as a slob. He liked to drink and cavort in smoke-filled rooms with his buddies. And, of course, he used to say, "I can take care of my enemies, but it's my God, G.D., friends that get me into trouble." Among his accomplishments I mentioned before, he was the first president to go to the South and tell the Southerners, white Southerners, they had to give the, quote, Negro his civil rights. He also started the Bureau of the Budget. He also set up the first White House media office. Also, his administration, which Secretary of State Frank Kellogg, had the first World Disarmament Conference in Washington. It was a naval disarmament conference, and Aristide Briand, who later became president of France, he attended. They had the Italians, I think Admiral, he was a captain, and Yamamoto, Irasuko Yamamoto, later became the chief of the Japanese Navy and plotted Pearl Harbor and other Japanese naval victories in the Pacific until he was shot down by one of our planes. But anyway, they had a formula of 5-5-3. The British and French and the Americans were allowed 5 battleships, 3 for the Italians, and I think 2 for the Japanese. The Japanese were pissed off. But this was in 1921. This was the first. He was the first American president to start a World Disarmament Conference. 1927, the Notre Dame University in South Bend, Indiana, is known as the Irish. However, they were wearing blue at one time, and they exchanged that blue for green. So I guess that's Irish. Among the other events today, Trotsky in 1927 was expelled from the Communist Party. He had to flee Russia. Stalin tried to assassinate him. Now, this is interesting. We mentioned Hillary Clinton and her role in Watergate. She was a lawyer, and then she supposedly filed a fraudulent brief, legal brief. She had shares the same birthday as Leon Trotsky. Trotsky's original, he was the founder of the Red Army, which defeated what was known as the White Russians. These were the Tsars and the Alexander Kerensky's people who tried to prevent Russia from becoming communist. Trotsky fled to Mexico, where he was tracked down by one of Stalin's agents, and he was assassinated. Trotsky's grandnephew, Trotsky's original name was Bronstein, and his grandnephew, Phil Bronstein, became the editor of the old Hearst San Francisco Examiner. He's no longer editor there. In 1933, we had the first known photo of the Loch Ness Monster, or Nessie, as she's called in Scotland. 1933, also, the Nazis claimed they got 93% of the vote. Sound familiar? Also, in 1938, Hermann Göring, who claimed that some of his critics claimed that he had Jewish blood, and if he says, he says, "I decide who's got Jewish blood." Anyway, he was the number two man in Germany, and he suggested that Madagascar, which was a French colony, be set up as a homeland for the Jews. 1944, the last of the great German battleships, the Bismarck, had been sunk by the British Navy in 1940, and their pocket battleship Graf Spee scuttled. The Tirpitz, which was in a Norwegian fort and was named after the modern father of the German Navy, it was finally destroyed in a Norwegian fort. The midget submarines tried to attach the mines to its bottom, and that only did some damage. And finally, One of the great British aviation scientists developed a bomb, a huge bomb, which was dropped on it through the clouds, and it hit its target, and the Tirpitz capsized. It's still, I guess, sunk, still in a Norwegian fjord. In 1946, the first bank drive-up window was set up in, of all places, Chicago, and I guess it's never been robbed. In 1948, the war criminal Hideyoshi Tojo had been convicted at the Tokyo War trials, and he was hanged along with several of the general Yamashita, who was the commanding general in the Philippines, and where they murdered a lot of Filipinos when MacArthur landed, although he claimed it was the Navy sailors that did it. He had to take the blame, and MacArthur blamed him. Since this we're celebrating and honoring our military veterans, here is President Warren G. Harding talking about military veterans.
There grows on me the realization of the unusual character of this occasion. Our Republic has been at war before. It has asked to receive the supreme sacrifices of its sons and daughters, and faith in America has been justified. Letting sons and daughters make the sublime offer whence the hallowed graves of the nation's descended. But we never before sent the men to battle under the flag in a foreign land. Never before was there the impressive spectacle of thousands of dead returning to find eternal resting place in the beloved homeland. The incident is without parallel in the history that I know. These dead know nothing of our ceremonies today. They sense nothing of the sentiment or the tenderness which brings their wasted bodies to the homeland for burial, close to kin and friends and cherished associations. These poor bodies are but the clay tenements once possessed of souls with claimed and patriotic devotion, lighted new hopes on the battlegrounds of civilization, and in their sacrifices fed on to accuse autocracy before the court of eternal justice. We are not met for them, though we love and honor and speak a grateful tribute. It would be futile to speak to those who do not hear, or to sorrow for those who cannot sense it, or to rejoice those who cannot know. But we can speak for country. We can reach those who sorrowed and sacrificed through their service, who suffered through their going, who glory with the Republic through their heroic achievements, who rejoice in the civilization their heroism preserves. Every funeral, every memorial, every tribute is for the living, an offering in compensation of sorrow. When the light of life goes out, there's a new radiance in eternity. Somehow the glow of it leaves the darkness which is left behind. Never a death, but somewhere a new life. Never a sacrifice, but somewhere an atonement. Never a service, but somewhere, somehow an achievement. These have served, which is the supreme inspiration in living. They have earned everlasting gratitude, which is the supreme solace in dying. No one may measure the vast and varied affections and sorrows centering on this priceless cargo of bodies, once living, fighting for and finally dying for the Republic. One's words fail, his understanding is halted, his emotions are stirred beyond control when contemplating these thousands of beloved dead. I find 100,000 sorrows touching my heart. There's ringing in my ears like an admonition eternal, an insistent call. It must not be again. It must not be again. God grant that it will not be, and let a practical people join in cooperation with God to the end that it shall not be. I would not wish a nation for which men are not willing to fight and if need be to die, but I do wish for a nation where it's not necessary to ask that sacrifice. I do not pretend that millennial days have come, but I can believe in the possibility of a nation being so righteous as never to make a war of conquest, and a nation so powerful in righteousness that none will dare invoke her wrath. I wish for us such an America. These heroes were sacrificed in the supreme conflict of all human history. They saw democracy challenged and defended it. They saw civilization threatened and rescued it. They saw America affronted and resented it. They saw our nation's rights imperiled and stamped those rights with a new sanctity and renewed security. We shall not forget, no matter whether they lie amid the sweetness and the bloom of the homeland or sleep in the soil they cleanse it, our mindfulness, our gratitude, our reverence shall be in the preserved republic, the maintained liberties, and the supreme justice for which they died.
Some recent presidential administrations. Now, Hillary Clinton has come up again. Hillary Rodham Clinton, that's her maiden name. She was just out of Yale Law School, and she was a lawyer at the working in the investigation of Watergate scandal and the Richard Nixon administration. No allegations that she wrote a fraudulent legal brief. I haven't seen the brief, so when we find it, we'll bring it up. But it would seem that with this Benghazi gate situation, that things have come full circle, that some of her things she's done has come back to boomerang on her. So we shall see what we shall see. Now, well, many years ago, my father was ill, and I had to return to Illinois. And I drove back in a truck, and I knew somebody who was in the construction business, and one of his employees was a kid from the South, I think from Arkansas, and his brother had been a victim of John Gacy, the one of Illinois' worst homosexual predators, preyed on young boys. Interestingly, John Gacy, like Juan Pifray, offered work to these young boys and then molested them, mutilated them, and murdered them. Now, Hugh Rodham, what had happened was the guy who owned a construction business borrowed my truck to haul some debris from a bar, a gay bar that Hugh Rodham had bought in, he bought the property, I don't know what he did with it eventually, in what was known as Newtown in Chicago. I think it's Clark and Diversey area, Lincoln Park. Anyway, I was supposed to return the truck one day, and they didn't, so I went to get it, and Hugh Rodham showed up. It was there, and he was talking about Bill Clinton and her marriage, his daughter's marriage to Bill Clinton, and he said, Bill Clinton's been running for president ever since he could breathe. So I said, well, I'll never vote for him, and I never did. But I had talked to the brother of younger brother was a victim of John Gacy, and he was really uptight. Very, I couldn't blame him for being anti-homophobic or homophobic, and I guess it really hurt that family. And they were essentially poor whites, I believe, from Arkansas. Now, this recently came up. I interviewed someone who also lived in Chicago and was living on the north side of Chicago where John Gacy used to, shall we say, not patrol, but he drove around picking up young boys and did it also in the Chicago Cook County suburbs. Anyway, this young man told me that when he was 13 years old, a guy who looked like John Gacy, he didn't know it at the time, came up, the kid was waiting for a bus, and John Gacy came up, or the man who looks like John Gacy, drove up and offered to give this 13-year-old a ride. And the kid was a little hesitant, and then he looked into the car and saw that it didn't have a door release. And so he declined. He refused the ride. And, of course, he possibly saved his life if it was, in fact, John Gacy. One thing we want to bring up, and a lot of people have been raising this question, and it's now more relevant than ever, and that is the Electoral College really relevant to the American electoral system today? The original objective of the Electoral College was to deny the vote to poor whites, indentured servants, women, free blacks, black slaves, and Native American Indians. And, of course, since the country was set up by what we would consider American aristocracy, they looked down on these people. So now, in fact, we've had a case, and I reported this earlier, that at least one elector, when they're supposed to cast their Electoral College votes in January to put the seal on the election, one elector, I believe, went against his state's vote. So, you know, the whole thing's irrelevant. It's almost like a House of Lords vetoing the popular vote. I mean, it's a waste of money, a waste of time. And shouldn't we have just this situation where the presidential candidate who gets the most popular vote wins the election? So let's keep on this. And we will end with our theme, politics and poker. We're going to see a lot of politics with this Benghazi situation, and also they keep calling it the fiscal cliff. And I hate this phrase, kicking the can down the road. I hate to think that the American budget is a can, an empty can that's pretty hollow and dented and rusted when it's kicked down the road. There's something about that phrase that just turns me off. Anyway, we'll end with our theme, politics and poker. We will be back with our regular time, 4 o'clock, but I don't want to miss the shows that I have planned for the new Shadow Amicus Veritas. Now, also, we mentioned Auguste Rodin, the thinker. We have a copy of The Thinker in the Palace of Fine Arts here in San Francisco, and one of the dogs decided it was going to pose in front of the Rodin's thinker. So go to Amicus Veritas YouTube, AmicusVeritas YouTube. We will have an expose, a rare video news clip from David Fowler, who I believe was gay. He died of AIDS, and he was also responsible for FEMA's plan for disasters. He worked for the National Fire Academy. He was also a very fine journalist, produced a lot of radio programs, and he worked with the San Francisco Fire Department. We used to call him Fowler, and our Fiorello Fowler, because Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia used to run around chase fire engines like Arthur Fiedler of the Boston Pops Orchestra. Anyway, Fowler did an interview with Dan White, which I got a copy for our archives. We will play that very interesting interview before Dan White killed Harvey Milk. I also had talked to a gay man. He was gay in his private life and had a partner who was brutally murdered. This gay man was a whistleblower. He was a city official here in San Francisco, and he told me, and unfortunately we didn't get it on tape, that Harvey Milk had molested Dan White. He sexually harassed him, that's a better phrase, and told him, we used to whisper in his ear that he was really gay. But anyway, what happened was horrible, and I'm not making excuse for murdering Milk, but there may have been more to it. Anyway, let's end with our usual theme, politics and poker. We'll be back at 4 o'clock Wednesday.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you $5. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here comes.
possible flush? Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Well, politics and poker aside, we'll be back Wednesday, hopefully at 4 o'clock, and have all our technical problems fixed. Good night, and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site.